Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. This is Tobias Rex, and this is the Sharks, Dinosaurs, and Mythical Creatures podcast coming at you right now. This morning's episode is going to be a special one, because it's not just one dinosaur I'm discussing, it's a whole family of them. Dinosaurs like Allosaurus, Stegosaurus, Ankylosaurus, Triceratops, T-Rex, and Velociraptor paint pretty big pictures in the minds of dinosaur lovers, but no other creature paints a bigger picture in the minds of children than the biggest dinosaurs of all. The sauropods. The sauropod, or long neck for you Land Before Time fans out there, is the thing that most likely comes to mind when we first hear the word dinosaur. And I know the majority of you folks grew up with Brontosaurus, which for over 100 years was called Apatosaurus. And in April 2015, a study was done, and kids, you can be happy again because it turns out that Brontosaurus and Apatosaurus are different species after all. But not all people agree with this. Some people do still consider them the same animal. And I used to. Sauropods were herbivorous, or plant-eating, usually quite long-necked, quadrupeds, meaning four-legged animals, often with spatula-shaped teeth. They had tiny heads, massive bodies, and most had long tails. Their hind legs were thick, straight, and powerful, ending in club-like feet with five toes, though only the inner three, or in some cases four, had claws on them. Their forelimbs were rather more slender, and typically ended in pillar-like hands that were used for supporting weight. Often only the thumb had a claw on it. The most defining characteristics of sauropods were their size. Even the dwarf sauropods, perhaps like 5 or 6 meters or 20 feet long, the size of a great white shark, were counted among the largest animals in their ecosystem. Their only real competitors in terms of size were animals like the blue whale. But unlike whales, sauropods were primarily terrestrial animals. Their body structure did not vary as much as other dinosaurs, perhaps due to size constraints, but they displayed ample variety. Some, like the diplodocids, possessed tremendously long tails, which if swung with enough force, probably could have broke the sound barrier like a snapping whip. Supersaurus, at 112 feet long, was the longest known sauropod from reasonably complete remains. But others, such as the old record holder, Diplodocus, were also extremely long. The holotype, and now lost, vertebra of Amphicelius may have come from an animal over 190 feet long. Its vertebral column would have been substantially longer than that of a blue whale. However, research published in 2015 speculated that the size estimates of Amphicelius may have been highly exaggerated. The longest dinosaur known from reasonable fossil material is probably Argentinosaurus, with a maximum length of 118 feet. And I heard on a dinosaur documentary, in the narrator's words, Argentinosaurus is as large and heavy as a fully loaded 737 at takeoff. However, a specimen of the giant Barosaurus may have been even larger, reaching lengths of 157 feet. Others, like the brachiosaurids, were extremely tall, with high shoulders and extremely long necks. Sauroposeidon was probably the tallest, reaching about 60 feet high, with the previous record for the longest neck being held by a Mamenchisaurus. By comparison, the giraffe, the tallest of all living land animals, is only 18 feet tall. The best evidence indicates that the heaviest were Argentinosaurus at 65 to 80 metric tons, Mamenchisaurus at 60 to 80 metric tons, Barosaurus at over 80 metric tons, and Patacotitan at 55 metric tons. And there was poor, and now missing, evidence that the so-called Brachiosaurus may have weighed over 175 metric tons, but this has been questioned. The weight of Amphicelius was estimated at 122 metric tons, but that was pretty exaggerated. The largest land animal alive today, the bush elephant, only weighs no more than 10.4 metric tons. As massive quadrupeds, sauropods developed specialized weight-bearing limbs. The hind feet were broad and retained three claws in most species. Particularly unusual when compared with other animals were the highly modified front feet. The front feet of sauropods were very dissimilar to those of modern large quadrupeds, such as elephants. Rather than splaying out to the sides to create a wide foot like elephants, these bones of sauropods were arranged in fully vertical columns, and they had extremely reduced finger bones, though it is not clear if the most primitive sauropods, such as Volcanodon and Barapasaurus, had these. And in some sauropods, the front feet were so modified that individual digits wouldn't have been visible in life. The arrangement of the forefoot bone columns in some sauropods was semicircular, so sauropod footprints are horseshoe-shaped. And unlike elephants, print evidence shows that sauropods lacked any fleshy padding to back the front feet. The only claw visible in most sauropods was the distinctive thumb claw. Almost all sauropods had these, though the purpose it was used for is unknown. The claw was largest, as well as tall and laterally flattened in diplodocids, and very small in brachiosaur species, some of which seem to have lost the claw completely based on trackway evidence. Titanosaurs may have lost the thumb claw completely as well. Titanosaurs were the most unusual amongst sauropods, as in addition to the external claw, they completely lost the front foot digits. Advanced titanosaurs had no digits or digit bones, and walked only on horseshoe-shaped stumps that were made up of the columnar metacarpal bones. Print evidence from Portugal shows that, in at least some sauropods, probably the brachiosaurs, the bottom and sides of the forefoot column was likely covered in small spiny scales, and these left score marks in the prints. In titanosaurs, the ends of the metacarpal bones that contacted the ground were unusually broad and squared off, and some specimens preserved the remains of soft tissue covering this area, suggesting that the front feet were rimmed with some kind of padding in these species. Matthew Bonin, or Bonon, sorry if I messed up your last name, has shown that sauropod dinosaur long bones grew isometrically, that is, that there was little to no change in shape as juvenile sauropods became gigantic adults. He also suggested that this odd scaling pattern might be related to a stiltwalker principle, and that was suggested by amateur scientist Jim Schmidt, in which the long legs of adult sauropods allowed them to easily cover great distances without changing their overall mechanics. And along with other dinosaurs, such as theropods, surprisingly including birds, sauropods had a system of air sacs, evidenced by the indentations and hollow cavities in most of their vertebrae that had been invaded by them. Pneumatic hollow bones are a characteristic feature of all sauropods. These air spaces reduced the overall weight of the massive necks that the sauropods had, and the air sac system in general, which allowed for a single direction airflow through stiff lungs, and that made it possible for the sauropods to get enough oxygen. The bird-like hollowing of sauropod bones was recognized early in the study of these animals, and, in fact, one sauropod specimen found in the 19th century was originally misidentified as a flying reptile or pterosaur because of this. And some sauropods had armor. Some had small clubs on their tails, such as Chunosaurus, and several titanosaurs, such as Saltosaurus and Ampelosaurus, had small bony osteoderms covering their bodies. And there's one particularly interesting-looking sauropod called Amargosaurus, and Amargosaurus has like a full sail on its neck. A study by Michael D. Emick and his colleagues from Stony Brook University found that sauropods evolved high tooth replacement rates to keep up with their large appetites. This study suggested that Nigersaurus, for example, replaced each tooth every 14 days, or 2 weeks. Camarasaurus, however you'd like to pronounce it, I say Camarasaurus. Camarasaurus replaced each tooth every 62 days, and Diplodocus replaced each tooth every 35. The scientists found qualities of the tooth affected how long it took for a new tooth to grow. Camarasaurus' teeth took longer to grow than those of Diplodocus because they were larger. It was also noted by Diemek and his team that the differences between the teeth of the sauropods also indicated a difference in diet. Diplodocus ate plants that were low to the ground, whereas Camarasaurus browsed in the top branches. According to the scientists, the specializing of their diets helped these different dinosaurs to coexist. Sauropod necks have been found at over 49 feet in length, and that's a full 6 times longer than the world's longest giraffe neck. Enabling this were a large number of essential physiological features. The dinosaur's overall large body size and quadrupedal stance provided a stable base to support the neck, and the head was evolved to be very small and light, losing the ability to orally process food. By reducing their heads to simple harvesting tools that got the plants into the body, the sauropods needed less power to lift their heads, and thus were able to develop necks with less dense muscle and connective tissue. This drastically reduced the overall mass of the neck, and that enabled it to grow longer. Sauropods also had a great number of adaptations in their skeletal structure. Some sauropods had as many as 19 cervical vertebrae, whereas almost all mammals are limited to only 7. And additionally, each vertebra was extremely long and had a number of empty spaces in them which would have only been filled with air. And an air sac system connected to the spaces not only lightened the long necks, but effectively increased the airflow through the trachea, helping the creatures to breathe in enough air. By evolving vertebrae consisting of 60% air, the sauropods were able to minimize the amount of dense, heavy bone without sacrificing the ability to take sufficiently large breaths to fuel the entire body. According to Kent Stevens, computer-modeled reconstructions of the skeletons made from the vertebrae indicate that sauropod necks were capable of sweeping out large feeding areas without needing to move their bodies, but were unable to be retracted to a position much above the shoulders for exploring the area or reaching up higher. Another proposed function of the sauropod's long necks was essentially a radiator to deal with the extreme amount of heat produced from their large body mass. Considering that the metabolism would have been doing an immense amount of work, it certainly would have generated a large amount of heat as well, and elimination of this excess heat would have been essential for survival. It has also been proposed that the long necks would have cooled the veins and arteries going to the brain, and that would prevent excessively heated blood from reaching the head. It was in fact found that the increase in metabolic rate resulting from the sauropod's necks was slightly more than compensated for by the extra surface area from which heat could dissipate. When sauropods were first discovered, their immense size led many scientists to compare them with modern-day whales. Most studies in the 19th and early 20th centuries concluded that sauropods were too large to support their weight on land, and therefore they must have been mainly aquatic. Most life restorations of sauropods in art throughout the first three quarters of the 20th century depicted them fully or partially immersed in water. This early notion was cast in doubt beginning in the 1950s, when a study in 1951 demonstrated that if the animal were submerged in several meters of water, the pressure would be enough to fatally collapse the lungs and airway. However, this and other early studies of sauropod ecology were flawed, and that they ignored a substantial body of evidence that the bodies of sauropods were heavily permeated with air sacs. In 1878, paleontologist E.D. Cope had even referred to these structures as floats. Beginning in the 1970s, the effects of sauropod air sacs on their supposed aquatic lifestyle began to be explored. Paleontologists used this, as well as evidence from sedimentology and biomechanics, to show that sauropods were primarily terrestrial animals. In 2004, D.M. Henderson noted that due to their extensive system of air sacs, sauropods would have been buoyant and would not have been able to submerge their torsos completely below the surface of the water. In other words, they would float and wouldn't have been in danger of lung collapse due to water pressure when swimming. And evidence for swimming comes from fossil trackways that have been occasionally found to preserve only the forefeet impressions. Henderson showed that the trackways can be explained by sauropods with long forelimbs floating in relatively shallow water deep enough to keep the shorter hind legs free of the bottom and using the front legs to punt forward. However, due to their body proportions, floating sauropods would also have been very unstable and maladapted for extended periods in the water. This mode of aquatic locomotion, combined with its instability, led Henderson to refer to sauropods in water as tipsy punters. While sauropods could therefore not have been aquatic as historically depicted, there is evidence that they preferred wet and coastal habitats. Sauropod footprints are commonly found following coastlines or crossing floodplains, and sauropod fossils are often found in wet environments or intermingled with fossils of marine organisms. And a good example of this would be the massive Jurassic sauropod trackways found in lagoon deposits on Scotland's Isle of Skye. Many lines of fossil evidence, from both bone beds and trackways, indicate that sauropods were gregarious animals that formed herds. However, the makeup of the herds varied between species. Some bone beds, For example, a site from the Middle Jurassic of Argentina appeared to show herds made up of individuals of various age groups, mixing juveniles and adults. However, a number of other fossil sites and trackways indicate that many sauropod species traveled in herds segregated by age, with juveniles forming herds separate from the adults. Such segregated herding strategies have been found in species such as Alamosaurus, Belusaurus, and some Diplodocids. In a review of the evidence for various herd types, paleontologists attempted to explain why sauropods appear to have formed segregated herds. Studies of microscopic tooth wear show that juvenile sauropods had diets that differed from their adult counterparts, so herding together would not have been as productive as herding separately, where individual herd members could forage in a coordinated way. The vast size difference between juveniles and adults may have also played a part in the different feeding and herding strategies. And speaking of feeding strategies, guys, sauropods don't chew their food, they gulp it. They have teeth, but they only use the teeth to rip off the branches. To grind down the vegetation, the sauropods swallow special stones called gastroliths. And it's a process that produces a lot of excess gas. So, like, the average human lets one 12 to 14 times a day, whereas the average sauropod may let one 40 to 50 times a day. So, standing in a herd of sauropods if they weren't feeling very well might not have been a good idea, I'll tell ya. Since early in the history of their study, some scientists have speculated that sauropods could rear up on their hind legs, using their tail as the third leg of a tripod. A skeletal mount depicting the Diplodocid Barosaurus rearing up on its hind legs at the American Museum of Natural History is one illustration of this. In a 2005 paper, it was reasoned that if sauropods had adopted a bipedal posture at times, there would be evidence of stress fractures in the forelimb hands. However, none were found after they examined a large number of sauropod skeletons. Heinrich Mallison, in 2009, was the first to study the physical potential for various sauropods to rear up on their hind limbs. Mallison found that some characters previously linked to rearing adaptations were actually unrelated or would have hindered rearing. For example, titanosaurs had an unusually flexible backbone, and that would have decreased stability in a tripod posture and would have put more strain on the muscles. Likewise, it is unlikely that brachiosaurs could rear up onto their hind legs, as they're often depicted doing so in films, as their center of gravity was much farther forward than other sauropods, and that would cause such a stance to be unstable. Diplodocids, on the other hand, appear to have been well adapted for rearing up into a tripod stance. Diplodocids had a center of mass directly over the hips, giving them greater balance on two legs. Diplodocids also had the most mobile necks of all sauropods, a well-muscled pelvic girdle, and tail vertebrae with a specialized shape that would allow the tail to bear weight at the point it touched the ground. Mallison concluded that diplodocids were better adapted to rearing than elephants are, and elephants do this occasionally in the wild. He also argues that stress fractures in the wild do not occur from everyday behavior, such as feeding-related activities. And there is a controversy over how sauropods held their heads and necks, and the postures that they could achieve in life. Various research looking at the problem from aspects, such as the neutral articulation of the neck vertebra, and estimating the range of motion, the metabolic and energy requirements of having incredibly long necks in comparison to living animals, have come to different conclusions. The claim that the long necks of sauropods were used for browsing high trees has been questioned on the basis of calculations of the energy needed to create the arterial blood pressure for the head if it was held upright. And these calculations suggest that it would have taken up roughly half of its energy intake. Further, to supply blood to the head vertically held high, it would have required lots of blood pressure at the heart. And this would have needed a heart 15 times the size of the hearts of whales of similar size. And this has been used to argue that it was more likely that the long neck was usually held horizontally to enable them to feed on plants over a very wide area without needing to move, a potentially large saving in energy for 30 to 40 ton animals. In support of this, reconstructions of the necks of Diplodocus and Apatosaurus show that they are basically straight, with a gentle decline orientating their heads and necks in a neutral, undeflected posture. And back to the heart part, hearts 15 times the size of a blue whale's heart, sauropods may have cared deeply for each other if they had hearts that big. Ain't that touching? Anyway, however, Research on living animals has argued that most living tetrapods raise the base of their necks whenever they're alert. An inference from the bones about neutral postures, which suggests a more horizontal position, may be unreliable. There was research published in 2013, and it studied ostrich necks, and that research took the estimated flexibility of sauropod necks into doubt. Studies by Matthew Cobley had revealed, using computer models, that muscle attachments and cartilage present in the neck would likely have limited the flexibility to a considerable degree. The authors cautioned against estimating range of motion from just using the bones alone. The discovery also reveals that sauropods may have had to move their whole bodies around to better access areas where they could graze and browse on vegetation. And, at last but definitely not least, the popular culture depicting them. Sauropods, well, mainly Brontosaurus, have appeared in every single dinosaur film, TV series, video game, and book imaginable. And here's a list of a few of them. And keep in mind, guys, this isn't every single dinosaur movie or game that has Brontosaurus, but it's definitely a few of them. In 1 million years BC, from 1966, a sauropod can be seen walking on a ridge in the distance, presumably a Brontosaurus. Brontosaurus also appears in The Secret of the Lost Legend from 1985. And here is the movie series and cartoons that have made Brontosaurus very popular to kids. The Land Before Time. The Land Before Time franchise revolves around a young Brontosaurus named Littlefoot. Not so long after Littlefoot was born, he lost his mother to a T-Rex, or Sharptooth, as they call him in the series. After he lost his mother, his grandma and grandpa took him in and raised him. And along the way, Littlefoot has made countless friends, such as a baby Triceratops named Sarah, a baby Parasaurolophus named Ducky, and a baby Stegosaurus named Spike, and a baby pterosaur named Petrie. And surprisingly, they have made friends with a sharp tooth, but it's juvenile, named Chomper. Brontosaurus also appears in the original and 2005 remake of King Kong. And another fan-favorite sauropod, Brachiosaurus, appears in every Jurassic Park film except The Lost World and Jurassic World. In The Lost World, we see Mamenchisaurus, and in Jurassic World, we see Apatosaurus. Brachiosaurus makes a comeback in Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, and the saddest bit of that film, to me and to most of you, is probably when the lone Brachiosaurus was standing on the dock, crying out to the boat before being engulfed in the ash and perishing. And what makes that scene even sadder is that it was confirmed to be the exact same individual seen by Alan Grant for the first time in the original Jurassic Park. A variety of several animals were used in the creation of the Brachiosaurus' voice. These animals include swans, geese, elephants, cows, and donkeys. And the sounds of the donkeys were slowed down in order to create the singing sounds that the Brachiosauruses make. And in my opinion, the sounds of nature with Brachiosaurus singing in the distance is very relaxing. So you and I are going to take a couple minutes of silence to experience that. Here are my favorite sounds of Jurassic Park's Brachiosaurus. In King Kong from 2005, the Brontosaurus were voiced by elephant nasal trumpets. In reality, the best sound that I think would fit the majority of sauropods, definitely Apatosaurus and Brontosaurus for sure, is a slowed-down loon call. Well, that's going to be it for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, be sure to like and subscribe to my podcast. It comes out every 2 weeks. This is Tobias Rex saying Godspeed, and I will sign off with a very important message about dinosaurs. Dinosaurs may be extinct, and we may never see them at all, but they will always be celebrities to us. But the sauropods especially Apatosaurus, Brontosaurus, Diplodocus, and Brachiosaurus, they will paint big pictures in the hearts of children, paleontologists, and dinosaur lovers the world over for eons to come.